Hey everyone, just me on this episode. I've been thinking a lot recently about the idea of localized manufacturing and talking to a lot of people about it. And we've also been posting about localized manufacturing with Alchemy through all of our various communication channels. And so I thought I'd just take a few minutes to dig into this a little bit more, because making things locally is really, really important to me, but I also think it's important to whatever place you live in. So first of all, what is localized manufacturing? So let me start by saying what it is, what it isn't. It's not bringing literally everything that's made around the world back into your hometown or to your home city, because in many cases, that's just not possible. It doesn't make sense. There's great manufacturing around the world on certain components, so there's no reason to mess with it. It's also not bringing it back just for the sake of bringing things back home. I think there's going to be a reason, and I think there's going to be a business reason and plus other considerations too. So business reasons quite often have to do with money or risk or quicker responsiveness and so on. I think some of the other reasons that are not classically business reasons for localizing manufacturing have to do with the importance of building your own community. I think this is a really hard one, and it's easy to be cynical about the importance of building your own community. And it's also hard to get someone to write a check to build your own community. But I do think it's important for business leaders to understand that bringing things back and making things locally helps to help create a more sustainable manufacturing future for wherever you live. And there's going to come a day when you're going to be glad that you did that. So I think that we've all got to think about the business reasons today, but we've also got to think about the investment in our community over the long term. I think there's some other considerations that we all have to think about. The aspect of changing from making something overseas and then bringing it back home also involves some risk, because you might have a pretty good supplier that's in another country, in China or India or Korea or somewhere like that, and bringing that product back into your home country or home state or city might actually be a lot harder than you think. So, for example, let's say you spent 20 years outsourcing the manufacture of a pump to somewhere in Asia. Well, there's almost certainly a lot of manufacturing know-how that now is in the hands and the minds of the people that are manufacturing that product. And maybe you've not done a really good job of documenting things that are really needed to be known about manufacturing that pump. And so you really not only outsourced manufacturing, but you've also outsourced the know-how and the capabilities. And so you can't just bring that pump back into the United States and hope that you're going to replicate things easily. So there's almost certainly going to be a period of time where you've got to find a way to take that tribal knowledge and make it part of your organization. And I don't know a way of doing that quickly. I actually think that's a very hard thing to do. So that process of transferring from overseas to back home, just I think you got to be prepared that to take some time to do that, and to do all the nitty gritty work necessary to understand what it's going to take to manufacture that product, and then addressing all the supply chain issues, like where can you get materials, where can you get the rest of your supply chain, other components, subcomponents, and can you get them closer to home, or can you economically bring them from other places and bring them back home so you can make that pump closer to home. So there's a bunch of business reasons, I think risk reasons to think about when manufacturing things back home. But there's, I think, and this is the thing that I've really been thinking about more than anything else. I think we have a big problem and challenge of manufacturing locally that is unavoidable in terms of addressing. And that is people. So even though you may have solved all the business things and all the supply chain things and understand your risk and cost of change and all that stuff, which is super important, you may not have the people necessary to make the products that you want to make close to home. And unfortunately, I think that's because we, at least in the United States, have underinvested in this very important skill set of manufacturing. And I mentioned this in my very first podcast that I grew up with people that were great makers, and my parents were makers. My mother was a seamstress and my dad was a pipe fitter. Those skills that they have were earned over decades of work and decades of really apprenticeship, of actually going to work and being taught by someone and having the opportunity to try and fail and learn by doing. We haven't done that much here in America, and I don't know why. And maybe it's not worth really even thinking about why at this point in time. It's probably just more important to invest all of our energy in figuring out how we fix this. And so I do have some thoughts on how to fix it. And unfortunately, none of these thoughts are easy solutions. I wish I did. If I did have the easy solution, you can rest assured that I would package it up and sell it for millions of dollars, but I don't think that's available. So here is where I think we begin and how we can address this. So I think it begins with how we talk about manufacturing with the young people in our society. I think it's really important to elevate the people who make things to hero status, because I do think they're heroes. They're just as important as athletes or artists or other people that we celebrate today. Those are the people in those other fields that truly are accomplishing remarkable things, but so is someone who can make something. And let's think about the idea of making something. It is literally taking an idea and bringing it into reality. It's taking a thought of something that doesn't exist and creating something that then another human can use. I can't think of anything more remarkable than that act. And so I think it's worth celebrating the people that can do that in our society. And you know what? These aren't people that are going to end up on billboards. They're not going to end up on cereal boxes. No one's going to make commercials about them, but I do think that we should be honoring the work that people like that do, and they're everyday people. They come home quite often covered in grease and dirt, and they're not necessarily glamorous occupations or glamorous people, but I've always loved those people, and I think that the young people in our society have to see the value of those kinds of individuals. And maybe there's a few ways we can do that. Maybe just by changing our conversation around people who make things. Maybe it's by highlighting the people that make things or the companies that make things as important parts of our community, telling those stories. But our young people have to see that that's important. I think the other thing is turning on the imagination of our young people. I truly worry sometimes that many of the young people in our community don't have a hopeful view of the future because, I mean, gosh, if you listen to the news or watch a bunch of other stories, it's really easy to become cynical. I think it's really important that the young people among us see a very hopeful future, not a future that is sort of abstract, like let's make the world a better place. I think that's completely meaningless. I think what's more important is pick something concrete, not abstract, that is worth building. So this is an example from a long time ago, which is the Hoover Dam or the Interstate Highway System, or my favorite example, which is we're going to go to the moon, the wonderful and famous speech that JFK had right here in Houston. I think people, especially young people, respond to a concrete, positive vision of the future, not an abstract positive vision of the future. So, and this is another reason why I love what people like Elon Musk are doing. He's building real stuff. He's extraordinarily ambitious and insane in lots of different ways, but thank goodness that he is. But you very rarely hear him talking about abstract ideas. You most often hear him talking about concrete ideas of the future. So I think that's the second thing that our young people need right after seeing makers as heroes is having concrete, positive visions of the future. I think the third thing is for them to see a real pathway for themselves in choosing a career in manufacturing or whatever the manufacturing related career that they're interested in. You know, no one young that I know wants to have sort of a dead end job where there isn't the opportunity to improve themselves, to improve their lives, to live a more holistic life. And so I think it's important that we've got to create those kinds of pathways. And some of these pathways already exist. So I'm not saying they don't exist at all, but I think we've got to tell the story that if you embark on a career of making things, that you can build a good life for yourself and a good life for your family. And it's not just a pathway that is all about work and all about money, because that's just not good enough anymore. I get into this debate with people of my generation about younger people and there's plenty of back in my day conversations, and I get it, and I've said those things too. But the fact of the matter is that younger people today think about working differently. I think they think about work as a part of their lives, not their lives. They're not a unidimensional generation. And I think that's a good thing, because we need the generation that's coming up behind us and the generations that are coming up behind us to think about the world in lots of different ways besides just money or just work. So I think that's the third thing, is we've got to build great pathways for young people to embark upon a career in manufacturing. And I think there's a lot of sort of sub elements behind that, which is how do they learn those kinds of skills and what's necessary for them to become good manufacturers. I think the apprenticeship model is a great example of a pathway, a very, very old idea of learning how to make something that is just as relevant today, maybe even more so. And so that implies great teachers who can then teach young people. My favorite, like, hyper geeky example of an apprenticeship is in Star Wars and becoming a Jedi Knight. I mean, I think that's the coolest example of an apprenticeship model, where you start out being a youngling and you're taught by a Jedi master on how to become a fully fledged Jedi. That's the same thing that can happen in manufacturing. It's not for everyone, but it is for some people. And we've got to find those people in whom the force is strong and that they're ready to take on this challenge. So that's what I've really been thinking about a lot, about localization. It's not just the businessy things, which are important, but it's more about building a future group of people that love to make things. And so, you know, I think it's important to consider the three things that I've described. That number one, that they see makers as heroes, even ordinary makers, ordinary people. Number two, that they have a concrete positive vision of the future with specific things that we want to build that are really transformational for the human race. And then the third thing is to provide interesting and rewarding pathways for our young people to join the world of manufacturing. And why is this even important? Why is it that we even embark upon this? And I've talked about this again in my very first episode. I do believe that we're on the cusp of what is going to be the most spectacular demand wave in any industry in human history. And I always get a little bit of eye rolling from people when I say stuff like that, which is fine. I don't care. But I think it's true. The world is just now beginning to want things in a way that they never have before and want real products for themselves. And you can see this in the numbers in Africa or in central China or in India, South America, other places where people are not consuming at the GDP levels that we're consuming at today. Those people are just joining the world economy, and it's worth building things for those billions of people around the planet. And so I think we need a generation of people that are ready and willing to do this. So what if Houston becomes the global leader in creating a generation of people, young people that love to make things? I think it's achievable. It's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm saying it's important that we take this on. And so in order for this grand vision of localization to happen, I think this issue of finding the next generation of makers is front and center in that challenge. And it's not going to happen overnight. That's fine. It's fine. Maybe it takes a decade. Maybe it takes 5 decades to do it. I just think it's worth embarking on this journey. It's something that's deeply important to me. And one of the reasons why I'm in the business that I'm in, and one of the reasons why I've launched the Manufacture Houston podcast. So anyway, I thought I would share those notes. Probably a bit rambling. That's okay. I don't mind rambling a little bit. I'd love to hear what you think about this, and I'd love for you to join the conversation with me and the other people for whom this subject is important. So thanks again, guys. I appreciate your time as always, and I look forward to hearing from you. Thanks. This has been the Manufacture Houston podcast, brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. If you'd like to be on the show or want to recommend someone to get on the show, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. MUSHKHAN, Mushkan. I look forward to hearing from you.